I'm recording now.
All right, same here.
Great.
All right. Hello and welcome to the Sweaty Startup. This episode is brought to you by Sparrow Websites, who actually just launched a new offering for service-based entrepreneurs called Launch Kits. You can check out the basically a $450 offering where they get you set up with all the tools needed to get a WordPress website, all that designed, built, Jabber integration, G Suite integration, email at your domain, Google Voice, all the awesome tools to run a service business online. And you can visit launchkits.com/sweaty to check out that. And I'm also really lucky to have the founder of Sparrow Websites, who's been sponsoring the show now for about 3 months, Adam Grimm, right here with us. Thanks for joining, Adam. I'm excited to hear your story.
Hi, Nick. Thank you. Yeah, excited to be here.
All right. So you founded Sparrow Websites as a basically web development firm for service-based entrepreneurs. That's your target. But I want to take it back to when you found this business. What year was it? And kind of what led to that decision? Where were you at in your life?
Yeah. So we started in 2016. I started with a partner, Justin Rule here. And we were at another agency, kind of a broader digital marketing agency. And I was the CEO over there doing a lot of the operational stuff and then also some of the marketing strategies. He was the creative director. So he was responsible for the design team and those types of things. So that's where we met. Was at
How old were you?
I was 30.
30 yeah, years old? Okay. Did you have any kids? Or
I had four kids. Yeah. So I had four kids, five kids. So we were that big. Yeah.
So you have to paint. You have to paint the picture of. So I'm assuming you had the experience and the know-how to deliver on what you were aiming to target. But paint me a picture of what your life was like, because I think so many entrepreneurs kind of skip the nitty-gritty details of where they are at as far as a family, as far as finances, and a point in their life where they can actually take a leap like this, especially at 30. I mean, I started my business when I had nothing to lose, and I was 19. It was a little bit different for you because you probably had. A lot of bills and car payments and house payments and so on. So let us know where what was kind of going on when you led up to that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was definitely risky. Maybe a little crazy. So glad it worked. But yeah, no, we were both the sole breadwinners for our families. We had about 10,000 in reserve. So we had about 2 months of, you know, expenses and things in reserve. So not a whole lot, honestly. It didn't work out. So we got started. We really wanted to do it. The timing was a little bit funny, just with some negotiation with the previous agency owner. We had been talking to him about doing something like this, and there were just some differences in ownership, just discussions and stuff like that, who would own what and things like that. And without going into too many details, it basically kind of fell apart right at the end.
So, you were trying to do what you were doing now with your company that you guys were working for.
Right. Exactly. Kind of a line extension type thing. So we actually thought there's going to be like a 6 month on ramp. And it turns out there's like a 1 week on ramp. So
you guys got let go. Like
Exactly. That's exactly right. Yeah. So it was, the plan was like, we're gonna do it for 6 months. Negotiations kind of fell apart. It's like, you know what? Like, you're done.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So we found ourselves, July of 2016, you know, no job, families. But we had sort of business plan in place and stuff like that. So,
okay. Did you have any customers lined up already? I mean, it seems like you'd have to have a couple to not immediately go apply and get a different job.
Yeah, a couple is exactly right. We had two, which certainly was not nearly enough to, you know, but it had some.
How much accounts receivable could you expect in the first couple months from those two clients?
Looking back, I mean, we might have had it wasn't much. I mean, maybe like a couple thousand a month. It might have been like $2,000
wow.
or $1,500 a month, something like that.
Were you living a pretty lean lifestyle and pretty low debt, or what was
low debt and a fairly lean lifestyle. That certainly helped a lot. But even with larger families and stuff like that, it was only so lean you can get, you know.
Four children, absolutely.
But there's a lot of hustle involved. That's something we can talk a little bit later, but one of the things that helped us the most is during our time, in this industry, we've made a lot of great connections. So we got to know a lot of people who could refer business to us. And as soon as they heard that we were out, I would say within a month, actually, we had, within a month, we had actually completely replaced our salaries. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. And that was due almost entirely to our referring partners, just, you know, friends, colleagues in the industry. So that was really what saved us. And again, so we can talk about later in the interview, but I mean, a big recommendation for that is anybody that you know that is kind of a parallel non-competitor can be a huge help. We've seen that with our clients too. So yeah, so that was a big help with us. Within a month, we had, you know, our replaced our salaries, and we were sort of up and running. But,
what city were you guys? Did you have an office together, or
we're in Pennsylvania? So yeah, so we had an office. We have a larger office, but yeah, we have an office here in Lancaster. So
that's right by Harrisburg, a couple hours outside of Philly. So pretty good location.
Exactly. Yeah. A little bit west of Philly. Yep. Mm-hmm. So yeah, south, exactly.
So. Awesome. Okay, so 2016, and fast forward now to 2020, January. I'll do some bragging for you because I'm pretty impressed by what you guys have been able to accomplish. You have 9 employees, yep. 6 full-time employees. All of those are in the United States, which is very rare and awesome for what you guys are doing. You brought on another partner three years in at a 10% ownership percentage. I want to talk about that. I also want to talk about the dynamics. Actually, we'll probably go there next with your partner. But average monthly revenue of $55,000,
which
is pretty awesome. So let's talk about that that early partnership agreement, what you guys talked about, some struggles that maybe went in, because so many people, me included, I walked into the person who it made kind of logical sense to share a vision with, shook the hand, and 50-50 split of company ownership and kind of the tasks that needed to be done. What was your thought process like, and how did you choose your partner?
Yeah, so we started planning as partners pretty early. But I will say most people told us not to do it. I mean, like a lot of previous mentors and things said it's too risky. One person's going to work harder than the other. You know, there's going to be you're going to have struggles eventually. Mm-hmm. And we're going into our fifth year here and haven't had that yet. But we had a lot of people that told us, and we had horror stories. You know, if you're like, oh, I had a partner, and then 3 years in, they changed their mind, or they just had new obligations, and it all fell apart. So
you had a working relationship with the person, and then I'm sure that helped a ton.
Yeah, that helped a ton. And then I think we also had shared values. So going into it, we kind of talked about what do we really want to get out of this? Is it super high profit margins? You know, do we want to get to X number? We both knew on some level, we wanted a little bit of flexibility for lifestyle and family. So we weren't going to push the other to kill themselves and work, endless hours,
Yeah, I don't want to skip ahead to the end of the interview, but in our prep, you told me that what's on the horizon, a goal for you and your co-owner is a 1 month sabbatical.
That's cool.
So when you talked about your 5-year plan back then, most people are let's conquer the world. Let's build a big firm. Let's bring in $1 million a month in revenue and have a office on the third floor of a Manhattan sky rise. Sounds like you weren't really interested in that. You were more interested in using entrepreneurship as a way to live the life that you wanted to live, which is what is your kind of ideal life?
That's exactly right. I mean, more time with family. We said we want to get, family incorporated in the business, that kind of thing. More connections with our community. So we did say we want to be able to do, offer volunteership opportunities and build out, other young entrepreneurs, that kind of thing. So from the gate. So it was way more important to be able to do that, have the time to invest in, local community and invest in family than it was to do all the things you just said. You have, massive revenues and those types of things. So
yeah.
And not to say one's wrong or the other, but having a partner that shared that vision was probably the most important thing out of the gate. Yeah. Shared values, mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
And you guys feel the same way about money and frugality and values and how about your skill sets? Do your skill sets kind of complement each other? Or I know they always say find somebody who's not really like you. I partnered with somebody who is identical to me, so I didn't listen to that advice either.
Yeah, we have probably the same personality type, which again is maybe very different personality types, but then totally different skill sets. So that also I think helps. Yeah, he's very creative. He's way more enthusiastic, charismatic. So sales and creative, he can just rock with that. And then I get into the the details more, and then more of the strategy, the technical side of things. He hates the technical side of things. So that was perfect. And then also we weren't trying to kind of play in each other's sandbox, So. There's got to be a lot of trust and partnership. Hey, mm-hmm. This is your area. I just trust that you got it. And not always kind of picking in and questioning every decision they make, that kind of thing. So,
okay. So you said the S word, which is my favorite word, sales. Yeah. I think that's where so many of these firms, because I'll be honest with you, a web development firm is kind of a glamorous firm. It's a hobby passion project for a lot of people. So it's a highly competitive area. And if you can't sell, build relationships, build trust, and convince somebody that, okay, look, I'm going to charge you a little bit more than the person from Pakistan, but I'm going to deliver something amazing for you. It's impossible to build and grow and scale a business, especially and have some profit left at the end of the day. Talk to me about sales. How did you guys get some of those early clients? And if you were starting out, if you were, say, with no experience, without that Rolodex of network that you had to lean on, what would you do to kind of supercharge some sales and get some business in the door?
Yeah. No, it was a key thing. I would honestly spend at least half my time, building direct sales, and half my time, actually, if I didn't have the Rolodex, I'd spend half my time trying to build the Rolodex, because we've developed new relationships over time, you know, that have helped us. So, you know, so if you are, you know, in a power washing business, finding, you know, a couple of good realtors who need you to kind of clean up a property beforehand, or, mm-hmm. you know, those kind of people that are going to need to use your service on an ongoing basis, or at least refer you ongoing business. I think there's a temptation when cash flow is really low. And we've even done this in the past to like, be like, oh, we need sales right now. So go right to the end consumer. But that's a well that dries up pretty quickly. So, so I'd say, I mean, we try to spend at least half our time just getting out there and getting to know, businesses that have sort of a close mission, but not competitors.
Okay. So you said half your time referral based, half your time direct sales. What do you mean by direct sales, and how do you guys approach direct sales in your firm?
Yeah. So it's a little different now. We have a full-time salesperson right now. We did.
Okay.
We started, but our approach to sales really is, to reach out with a lot of value and very little obligation. We hate being sold to. Everybody hates being sold
to. The add value first principle. I love that one.
We literally, so our sales guy's approach is, sometimes he goes in person, which is always nice. And sometimes it's an email, but even when it's an email, he just sends them a video with like five things they can do to repair their website. And there's very little, you know, I think we might have one follow-up email after that, you know, which we might miss out on some sales, but we'd rather be less annoying and miss out on some sales than have like a whole 20 chain, you know, follow-up emailing every day and have a bunch of people out there that just don't trust us.
That's awesome. You're looking at the website, you pull it up, you say, okay, you don't have an SSL certificate, or okay, you need this, you need that. Your speed is slow. Your SEO is getting killed here. And you just send them an email with, okay, you can either hire me to do this or do it yourself. I don't care, but this is what you should do to improve and get better.
That's exactly right. And we'll often even say, hey, you can have your current web guy do this. This is fine. But just, these are like five things that you should really be looking at that's kind of killing you out there right now.
I think Oren Claff came on and talked about the sales environment of, okay, I'm an expert. Show first that I'm an expert. Show first that you can trust me. It's less pushy, less, you know, sales. Say yes now. It's, I'm really good at what I do. This is how I'm going to prove it to you. You can hire me or not, and it's fine with me.
Yeah, and that's been working great in the direct sale. Yeah, that's been working really well. So, his close rate's really good. And
when did you hire that sales guy? And would you share some like ROI on how much he's able to bring you guys and how it kind of works out? Because I'd say that's a milestone to hire an outside salesperson. It's revenue off the table at first. You're not sure what's going to happen. Take me through the thought process on that.
Yeah, so we were really fortunate with him. He came on board probably last November. So he's been on board for, you know, maybe like 6 months now, a little, you know, something like that. It really worked out well. He was actually selling websites before, sort of a different approach, a little more in the direct sales, just kind of more, you know, like I said, sell. So there was a little bit of, conversation early on, but his goal was to actually work full-time in commission. He has a nonprofit that he has a very part-time nonprofit, but a full-time sales role wasn't letting him get any time into his nonprofit. So his goal is, hey, I'm going to come into your office 4 days a week, and for you guys, and I'll sell. And that gives me the flexibility to also kind of launch my nonprofit on the side. So,
and he was able to say, pay me when I bring you business.
When you bring the business. So that for us, I mean, even cash flow wise, you know, we're healthy cash flow wise, but salespeople can be expensive. So to bring in a high base and then also have, you know, commission on top of that really would have crushed us. So I will say we probably gave up a little bit of margin, you know, on there. I think on average he probably gets like 20 to 25% of the margins.
Is he the highest paid person at your company yet?
I think he would, for sure.
That's awesome. Yeah, sales
commission. You know, yeah.
It's a testament to the power of sales, and if you can learn sales at an early age, it's an amazing skill.
It is. It really is. So they're hard to find, but if you can find, you know, a friend or colleague or someone that would, you know, do full, even if they're doing part time work, but they work straight commission. At our growth stage, that first couple of years, it's a really nice way to kind of dip your toe into sales and start to figure out some of your sales processes without putting like a $60,000, $80,000 base plus commission.
Yeah. Awesome. And I kind of want to talk about what that's done and the growth and the trajectory of what you've done from the beginning. So let's go there next. But I want to talk about the other part of the sales pipeline that you guys have, and that's networking. How do you utilize your connections? How do you make new connections? How do you get those referrals? And what are kind of some things that you've done that have really supercharged your sales?
Yeah. So I think, at first case, it's just, it's identifying them, obviously. So we know in our space, agencies are critical. So like content agencies, PR agencies, all those people who someone would go to for a website or maybe even ask for a website, they don't want to mess with the website. You know what I mean? So there are a couple local marketing agencies that we do all their websites. You just straight white label it. And, you know, just looking at our clients who maybe fit even more of the sweaty mold, you know, who are, you know, painters and that type of thing. They've really followed a same path, a similar pathway, where it's really just making that list of who are all the people who someone might ask for my service, you know what I mean? Who might need that help, but don't want to deal with it. So realtors are always a good one in some of the home services space. I mentioned them before. Sometimes even corollary home services, like we've seen power washing companies be referred by painting companies and vice versa. You know what I mean? If there needs to be some cleanup and they just don't want to have the mess with that. So identifying them have been the first key. And then sometimes it's direct outreach, but we've had a lot of success with education. So we'll do educational sessions, you know, here at the office, you know, so for like realtors, for example, we had 30 realtors in here and we just talked to them about Google My Business and just said, hey, here's why Google My Business is important for you, you know, and just kind of ran down the list. So
you're adding value on all areas, basically. Let's add as much value as we possibly can and the business will come.
That's exactly right. I started before this, actually, I worked for a home inspection, it was my cousin's home inspection business, but back through high school, and he got, I mean, almost 100% of his growth was just that. He would do, you know, education for realtors. Hey, when you're doing home inspection, here are the 5 things you need to look for, that kind of thing, just a lot of value, not salesy, and got a ton of value that way. So trying to find partners through education can be really useful.
Gold nugget number one. Gold nugget number one, figure out who could possibly refer you business, who people are asking for your service for, but they don't necessarily provide it. And then educate them, give them resources to learn just enough to refer and be knowledgeable and kind of be able to help their clients feel good about trusting them, I think is an excellent. My good friend in Athens came on the podcast. He is a mortgage broker and he does tons of educational seminars for realtors because realtors send him a lot of business. So that's excellent advice, Adam. I really appreciate that. So if you're in any sector and you're looking for people to refer you business, find out who those people could be, and then find a way to educate them, help them, give them resources in some way. So awesome stuff. All right. So I'm looking at our work on your website. I'm on sparrowwebsites.com. I guess it's /our-work. And these are almost all service businesses. We have roofing companies. We have landscaping companies. We have, like you said, home inspection companies. How did you find this niche? And was it right off the bat that this was going to be your target?
We were probably a little broader at first, which is, I know when you're first starting a business, you tend to go broad and then go niche, but the earlier you can find a niche, the better. But yeah, we just found, you know, for ourselves, one of the things we found we're really good at is bringing leads in for people. So as opposed to like a restaurant that's trying to drive, you know, tons of awareness, or an e-commerce business that's trying to, you go out there and do a lot of like digital marketing to bring ads, you know, for us personally, when we could tell a story of a service business, how they help their customers, what guarantees they have, that type of thing, and then drive them into a funnel where they actually, you know, call and be a service-based lead. That works really well for us. So a lot of it was seeing, you know, hey, what projects should we knock out of the park? The client loved us, we loved them. And then on the flip side, you know, which projects were just awful? You know what I mean? Either the client wasn't happy with the stuff we do, or we just didn't like working with the client because their expectations were out of alignment, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And I think any business can apply that principle, just looking back over the course of a couple months and seeing what's working and not working. Mm-hmm. Then for us, it was the service-based businesses, you know, and you know, my family, I've got a deep roots in a lot of people that were architects and plumbers and different service type businesses. So I love that aspect to it. And there's great people to work with, you know, they really, they're right on the front lines of their customers and see the value of doing good work.
So. Yeah, it's really interesting. Digital marketing for online businesses is so much different than local businesses. Local businesses, it's equal important to be on Google and understand Google and how Google works. And then the other side of it, just have a trustworthy page where you're telling a story of your company. So I'm really impressed with what you guys going on. So let's talk about 2016. Can you give us a breakdown of like growth per year? Like how much revenue you guys were having, like how many employees you kind of hired as the years went on?
Yeah. So so most of our employees came a little bit toward the last year and a half, I'd say. Our growth per year, we about doubled every year actually. So that was really exciting, except last year. And there's kind of a twist to that. So we started out, I think our first year, we're kind of midway through the year, it was about 80,000 a year. And then we doubled that,
And that was early on. It was you and your partner kind of working on your time and no employees and very lean.
Exactly. And we were 100% project-based before that. So it was that really kind of, you know, hunt, kill, eat kind of model, you know, where we go out there, we find a project, we do the project, and then you ought to right away be selling the next project. Mm-hmm. So we grew really quickly, just based on reputation, all the things we talked about before, referring partners, that kind of thing. But as last year was starting, we just realized like it was just exhausting, first of all. It just wasn't a healthy way to run the business because you look 3 months down the road and the revenue was next to nothing. I mean, I think we had 10% of our revenue at the beginning of 2019 was coming in from recurring revenue. So
wow.
90% of revenue had to be sold within, you know, 3 months on an ongoing basis.
And these websites that you're building aren't really perishable items that they need to come back to you every year to get a new one. Your lifetime value out of one client is not necessarily very strong.
It's not. Yeah, you're exactly right. If you build a website right, it should look good for the next 5 years at least, you know. So mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're exactly right. So we started 2019 saying, hey, we've really got to switch to recurring revenue. We've got to have more, you know. And also there's the relational side of things where like we've always stayed in the lane of websites. And I'd say that's also been really important for our partners is that we're doing one thing. So, you know, it's not like we're doing websites and then tomorrow we're going to be selling AdWords. So that's probably another key to success with that is that they're not afraid that we're going to start competing with them. Mm-hmm. Like we've been kind of built a reputation for staying at lane. The downside to that is, you know, people would come back to us and be like, hey, we loved you guys. What else, you know, can you do for us? We're like, well, websites are kind of what we do, you know?
Yeah, so, I'm not going to do SEO. I'm not going to do content marketing. I'm not going to do digital marketing. So
exactly. That's exactly right. So there's a little bit of an awkward relational thing there. We're like, they really trust us. We love working with them, but then it's kind of done, you know? So other than mm-hmm. some like posting, we never talk to them again. So we came up with the idea of just, you know, building plans where we would just build out the website over time, where we do, you know, unlimited updates for them. We give them some ideas for things they can do to update their website. Still very focused on the website, but a little higher revenue, you know, and the clients actually loved it because they're getting a better website over time. And it gave us more recurring revenue.
But instead of charging $3,000, you're doing a lot of upfront work for free. I imagine that crushed your cash flows.
That's exactly right. That was the the scariest part of the business. Cause like we said, we're gonna change our pricing model. We're gonna go to more, you know, it was like, you know, we had like a $200 and a $500 plan essentially a month. But we really dropped the front end website. So, we were doing huge website projects like 10K and up. And then we mm-hmm. dropped our pricing down to, you know, down to about an average of like 2,500 to 5,000, mm-hmm. usually mm-hmm. more around 3,000, like you said. Mm-hmm. So we went from getting like, you know, it could be anywhere from like $10,000 to $50,000 at one shot, down to getting like 3,000 one shot.
Oh boy.
A little bit, we experimented with no upfront, you know, and we just had a higher monthly cost. But that, it killed our cash flow, honestly. Cause the bad math we didn't do was that we'd have to sell so many websites and just kind of tank ourselves to keep up with that work. So that was definitely on us. And luckily we didn't have too many employees back then, but I think we had two employees back then.
What year was that shift?
That was fairly recent. I mean, that was the beginning of 2019, you know, I think we started 2019 with two employees. You know, but cash flow like almost all but disappeared, you know, it's coming in, but you know, when we sold a fair amount, but not nearly enough to meet the demand. So we're always able to pay our employees, but sometimes, you know, as partners, we took some gaps between our paychecks and, mm-hmm. you know, it got a little hairy, you know? So, mm-hmm. And we just didn't, and we also didn't do enough market research. You know, what we realized is like, sure, people don't want to pay, you know, 10 to 50 for a website, but they're very comfortable putting a small upfront investment, you know, and that gives us some more flexibility to put more time into the website, those types of things. So,
and the lifetime value is higher and you can, you have that to lean back on.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. So within, I'd say like, you know, a couple of months, we had sort of made a correction and things like that, but there was that first quarter of 2019 was just brutal. You know, with very little cash flow and things like that. So
you all are nearing $700,000 a year in revenue. That's impressive. Last year, did you not quite double this year, you said?
Oh, we didn't even know. I think we grew by 10%, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Part to do with that shift. And also you took on an extra 4 full-time employees since then. So
yeah. So that the rest of 2019 ended up being pretty good in that like we made the correction and then we were able to sell a lot of recurring revenue. So we went into 2020 with now we're about 80% recurring revenue. So we don't need to consistently sell those projects. We've got clients we have deep relationships with, all that kind of stuff. So we were totally fine only taking a 10% growth, especially with the way you started. There was a little bit of overhead increases. We got a new office, a bigger office space and that kind of thing.
So yeah, it's a great thing because I have a little bit of familiarity with websites and the expense and the cost of doing this. I mean, you look at an SSL certificate, a virtual, a private server, G Suite, WP Rocket to speed your site up. I mean, you have a huge out of the box and it's recurring expense to these other software companies. So you guys can kind of bulk buy that stuff. And this is a kind of a shameless plug on LaunchKits and why it's so awesome. But if you're going to build a fast SEO friendly website, it's going to cost you $1,500 just in software and another $500 a year just to maintain that. So you guys have kind of leveraged that and say, hey, look, we're building 200, 300, 400 websites a year. We can buy this stuff a lot cheaper. and pass this stuff right on to service business owners. And that's why launch kits is so, it's such a win-win relationship. And I bet it's a lot easier to sell.
it's been really easy to sell. I mean, it's, so within the service niche, we love early stage, service businesses. So whether they're a startup or they're in year one or two, and we were finding so many that did one or two things, either had a terrible website, or maybe they even didn't get a chance to build a website yet. But to even $3,000, which is way below market average here in Lancaster, at least, mm-hmm. even $3,000 is a massive amount of money if you've got, hardly any cash flow coming in, or you're just paying your living expenses. So,
or you don't need more sales and just, you're trying to keep your head above water. I mean, you're seeing, I want to talk to you a little bit at the end here, what you're seeing out there in these companies that you're dealing with as far as their potential, their revenue, because you're getting an inside look at how they all do business. But yeah, go on is kind of like these early stage companies. It's kind of a struggle.
It's a brutal for these guys. Like they, there wasn't that ability. And then you can build your own website, but like you said, you're still looking at, I mean, if you've got all the right plugins, you build it the right way on the right frameworks, you're still looking at $1,000 to $1,500 because they can't leverage the volume, volume discounts. And you've got to put in, a lot of times stuff that would take, one of our developers, 2 hours would take a non-skilled person, 10 hours or 2 days of work, which when you're trying mm-hmm. to get out there and actually do billable work is not something you want to, spend your time mm-hmm. doing. So, mm-hmm. So we had personal friends that went through this. We had clients that went through this, and we just, so the launch kits model really was birthed out of that, saying, hey, there are two things we can really leverage, a couple of things we can leverage. The one is that we get bulk discounts. So we can charge less on the upfront because we're getting a discount. We can pass that along. The other thing is we've seen frameworks that work over and over again. They're just models of writing or models of building a website that convert really well for service-based businesses. That, hey, if you have, three unique identifiers and you have a quick process and you have a guarantee somewhere on your website, like some of these recurring things that you want to make it unique to you, but there's a core framework that people kind of expect to see, or people are more likely to buy from a service business if they have those things in place.
And Google likes a lot more as well.
And Google likes those things too. Exactly. So hey, like this framework really works for people. We get these discounts. Let's build something on that framework and then drop the cost down, to a point where people can actually afford it. And then they can, for an early stage startup business, it's the perfect fit. So
yeah, you got, launchkits.com/sweaty is where you go to check this stuff out. And I don't want to get too sales oriented here, but for $50 a month, I mean, I pay $50 a month for the crappy couple plugins that I have on, our lawn care site that we wish we would have just got you to pay, get our hosting all set up in the first place. So it's pretty awesome stuff. Okay. So let's talk about hiring. How do you go about vetting, hiring employees, and what are some struggles? Because 2019, you started the year with two people. Now you have nine. That's not easy. And tell us about some mistakes you made, some things that you're doing that are kind of working for you now.
Yeah. So as far as when I look back, like the most difficult moments, cash flow is the one thing during that time. Then hiring was the other one. We got lucky. We hired the first person who's actually the one is a partner now. It was amazing. He took on more work. He dove right in, et cetera. Our second person we hired, and it was really on us. We just didn't vet him well enough. He was managing like a non-digital business. So he, had a capacity for that type of thing. We brought him as a project manager, but he had never worked in a digital first business. So it's not uncommon for our employees to get like 100, 150 emails a day, just from client requests and stuff, and then just kind of fielding them and getting them to the right place, responding to them. A good digital manager actually can handle that pretty easily. He just didn't have that experience. So he got really frustrated really quickly. We were like trying to help him along, but also kind of frustrated because the clients were like, hey, I haven't heard back from this guy for, a week, Oof. So it was really, so our clients weren't having a great time. He was having a hard time. It just got, really, really challenging. And that's,
it was hiring is one of those things that's so anxiety driven because you're giving your baby, your clients are your babies. Your business is your baby. You're putting it in the hands of somebody that you barely know. This is the hardest part. I mean, most people out there doing service businesses, the hardest part is getting that first employee to deal with front end all the way from the first interaction to a client to the end. And it sounds like that would leave a pretty bad sour taste in your mouth about the growth and trajectory of the company.
It was really tough. And you don't even want to talk about firing somebody. It's the hardest decision you have to make, So, and that one was kind of, we mutually had parting ways. And then we had another, and the second was actually another kind of rough time where they a little bit misrepresented their skills and that kind of thing. So we take a little less blame for that. But again, so we have back-to-back, rough hires. And we're like, man, should we just not hire anyway? And fortunately, I mean, this is one where, there's a local group it's around the country. It's called SCORE. It's Society of Retired Executives. It's free mentoring basically from people that have been in, executive level positions. They just have to retire, they go and they volunteer and they'll meet with you. So we met with one of those, and we met with another HR person that was just a friend, and they walked us through so many different ways to do skills development, you know, to actually have an employee manual, to have, you know, processes in place. And, you know, that's some stuff, you know, we had some, at least last agency, you know, they're about 30 employees. So doing HR for 30 employees is very different than doing HR for like two employees, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. And you are the HR manager, basically.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you're doing all that kind of stuff. Yeah, mm-hmm. So that's one where before, you know, if anybody's out there, you know, in this kind of startup mode, getting a good mentor, you know, before they hire and just kind of walking through some of those processes and making sure they have a good plan in place is really huge. You know, I wish we had done that. We would have avoided two, you know, bad hires and some, you know, we were able to recover from it. But yeah, that, like you said, that's one of the hardest things to do.
So you brought in those first two employees, and it was basically you sitting with them for a week, trying to tell them how to do everything, show them how to do everything manually. And then I guess the takeaway here is if you can standardize some things and have a if this, then that kind of a system yeah. framework, it makes their decisions, their life, and your trust, everything gets a little bit easier.
Yeah, it's going to be different for every business, but having some kind of assessment where they can actually show that they can, you know, do the work, that they're comfortable with the work, they can kind of feel what the work is like. Some kind of assessment's really huge. That's been really important for us. And then having just standards in place, like before you hire the person, even we start, you know, going up and trying to find somebody, like we want them to meet these objectives over this time. So they know what the standards are, and they can say, yeah, I can do that, or I can't do that. And I'll say, unfortunately for us, we haven't had to lean on that since then. The rest of the employees have been just fantastic.
I will say that I can tell, I have a look now inside of your business a little bit, because you built sweatystartup.com, and it was very standard. Like you laid out a very clear timeline from the very beginning. This is when you can expect the wire framework. This is when you can expect the SketchUps. This is when you can expect the pre-live staging website. And this is when we can make edits at this time. And I can see that an employee with that kind of structure, with those kind of, you know, deadlines, or I wouldn't say deadlines, but a standardized system to approach every single client, gets a little bit easier to manage everything when it's all pre-organized.
Yeah. Process. Yeah. That kind of process mapping is just huge. It's great for our employees. And we've seen it, you know, just especially with our service-based clients, you know, we've got a landscaper out in Philly, and it's just amazing what they can do by having a good process. Like, they're just crushing the competition, because it's exactly that. Like, hey, we're meet you today. You're going to get a design review. You know, then we're going to, you know, build a design review. We're going to find this person, so their employees know what to do. Their customers know what to expect. It keeps their overhead really low. And just, it's an easier way to run a company. You know, there are fewer surprises. So
yeah, it's amazing. You mentioned the landscape company. So you have kind of a look into how some of these businesses operate, and it is unbelievable the lack of communication. They kind of put communication with customers on the very back burner, behind communication with employees, behind communication with everything else. It's unreal to work with a professional company that says, hey, look, you just now called me, but this is how everything works. This is how the timeline looks. This is how far booked out we are. This is when you can expect a quote. This is when you can expect to review the quote. This is when we'll be done. It's unreal.
Yeah, you know, you're right. It's really rough. And I mean, and we've had, because we deal with the service businesses, we've sent people to your podcast before, because I mean, a lot of these people, they just haven't, some of the fundamental stuff they haven't thought through, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and the ones that are doing it well, I mean, just some basic, like a list of outlines, a list of checklists, that kind of thing, are just crushing their competition, because like you say so much on the podcast, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. there's so many people have bad experiences out there. Like they tried it, they spent a lot of money, and they just got no communication, that kind of thing. So
you're dealing with companies that do anywhere from a couple hundred grand a year in sales, or even less actually, all the way up to 10, 20, 30, $50 million a year in sales. What are you seeing as the big separator, or just, I guess, what are you seeing out there as far as the environment for entrepreneurship and these sweaty opportunities? Because you're looking at businesses that call you every day that are kind of in this domain.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the, I mean, that's why I love the podcast. I mean, it is one of the best growth areas out there. You know, the market's just booming right now for, it's a blend of, like, there's really high demand, all the things you've said before, there's really high demand. And there's just some people that have been in it for too long, and they're kind of jaded. They haven't updated their processes. They haven't met with the new standards, that kind of thing. Yeah. As far as growth, I mean, it's amazing. Like little things like getting Google reviews, for example. I mean, so many businesses out there that have been around for ages have never actually asked their customers for Google reviews. So we've helped some younger companies that are newer in the game just build out a good Google My Business page, get a good like process mapping for asking for feedback later on, and they jump ahead of them in search results, and it just looks like a more trustworthy business. It's crazy. Mm-hmm.
That's actually included right in the launch kit, is to get all that stuff done. And Google has a new thing where you have to get kind of recommended at the very top of Google My Business. There's like a check mark by your business. There's just some things that you can do to, these companies that are operated like it's 1985 don't even know they have a Google My Business location, let alone how important and critical it is for bringing in leads and converting leads.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Even if you're doing it on your own, at least getting a process for that type of thing. Like, that's a small thing, but yeah, and then just building out a nice site, building out, you know, a good, you know, online presence, those types of things make a dramatic difference. And it's like I said, it's crazy. You can have a business that's been around for 30 years that hasn't done any of that. And then the newer business that just does it, they seem more reliable. And in a lot of cases, they actually are, because they put some thought in their processes. They're jumping ahead. So,
and let alone the admin work that one little tool like Jobber can save you on a monthly basis. Yeah,
that's exactly right. You know, I mean, there's a lot, I forget what service we offered, but we called somebody and like, he was like literally out in the field, you know, and like, it's really obvious. Then he forgot to call us back, you know? So having something like Jobber where they can go right in, they can pick a time for the meeting and then schedule that, you know, is going to get them so much further ahead than the competition.
Yeah, we look at how some businesses actually do these things and what their processes are as we're buying these self-storage facilities. And some of them have kind of built their own Frankenstein Google or Microsoft Excel spreadsheets on how to keep track of customers and reminders that aren't really coming and no notifications to customers. It's crazy how they actually operate their business. So if we do these little things, we can have a huge advantage. Okay, yeah. Man, I think we're going on timing here to let you get back to work. But anything else you want to share as far as a key takeaway for our audience of aspiring service-based entrepreneurs? You've built a service business, you've hired, you've scaled it. Congratulations on your success. And also thank you so much for your support of the show and everybody here for adding some value. We're going to do an episode in just a few minutes on basically what to think through when you're going to build a website yourself, as you say. Add some value first in that regard. But any last key takeaways that you kind of wish you knew before you dove in, or regrets, or kind of maybe some nudges on why you should kind of follow your path?
Yeah, I mean, I think the positive thing, you know, I think we did, you know, just yeah, getting those early relationships with people that can refer business to you, it gets overlooked a lot. It makes a huge difference. So add some value directly for them. That's really huge. I mentioned a little bit, customer reviews are often overlooked. So just build good relationships with your customers that you can lean on them for referrals, and also lean on them to kind of leave that feedback publicly. Those are two great things that have really, really helped us. And then things that we didn't do quite as well, but just, yeah, doing some really good process mapping out of the gate, and just find a good mentor, someone that you can kind of lean on or get some good feedback. You know, you don't have to do it alone. There are free resources. There are people out there that are ready to help you. So try to find them and just try to be transparent with them and let them kind of guide you to success. Something I wish we'd done a little bit earlier.
Yep. As I always say, take advice from anybody and everybody and ignore what doesn't work and cling to what you can kind of get through your BS meter in your own head is like, okay, this guy or this gal and this advice is amazing. It's such an important thing. So what's next for you? Take us 5 years down the road. Where do you want to be?
Yeah. So we've got three big things on the horizon. One is launch kits. I mean, we really wanted to offer something that we haven't found in the market yet. That sits between the free do-it-yourself, you know, and sits between the $3,000 to $10,000 website. So we're excited about launch kits. You know, it's a affordably priced option that should get, you know, early stage service businesses out the door a lot more quickly. So we talked about that already. We're here at our building. We've got a lot of space. So we're starting something locally called Ignite Entrepreneurs. So we're doing, going back to that education tip, now that we have some space here, we want to create more educational sessions, kind of create a co-working community of sorts here of people that can just come together, and a lot of service businesses that can come together, learn together, kind of grow together, that type of thing. So we're super excited about that. And then you mentioned earlier, I mean, one of our goals is, you know, we've kind of, I don't think we've taken a real vacation in the last 5 years, which every business owner says, you know, so now that we have some employees that are in place and can take on some of the work, the founders here, we're looking forward to next year. We said we're going to take a year sabbatical and cover for each other. I mean, sorry, year, take a month sabbatical. You know, for each other. We're not there yet. But yeah, just take some time with our families, travel a little bit, and just kind of reconnect. So we're really excited for that get to that level.
It's a beautiful thing. Hopefully we'll have you back on a yearly basis to get some updates on what you're working on, what you're learning out there in the trenches, man. So thanks for all your work. Again, thank you so much for the support of the show here and our audience. And if you want to check out what Adam's doing, you can go to sparrowwebsites.com. And if you want to check out the launch kit, you go to launchkits.com/sweaty. Adam, thanks for coming on, man. Really appreciate it. We're going to wrap it up, and we're going to record another episode right now on how to build a website that you can keep an eye out for.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it.
All right. Talk soon. Perfect.